Explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we have a very exciting show today. We're going to be speaking with the authors of One Great Year, a novel by Tamara Vitek?
Veach.
Tamara Veach and Renee DeFazio. Welcome to the show. Hello. They're just getting their headsets on there. Thank you. So this is a novel, and normally I don't do novels on Synchronicity, but oh yeah, first of all, I want to put out the station. This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might also be listening in Kamloops at CFBX or in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. So there we go. And now, I normally don't do novels, but we met at an event for Namaste, for the Miracle event, right?
Right, correct.
And then you shared the book with me, and
we had already been following you.
Oh,
so
yes.
So it was quite exciting when they said, oh, Marie Bernard is here from Namaste, and she's going to be, you know, following this up for us. So I went, okay, I've got to meet this girl because I've already talked to her online. So I was looking forward to that.
Awesome. Yay. And then you sent me your book, and it took me forever to read it. I'm sorry, because I get so many books coming my way. But then once I started reading it, oh, my God, like, it's huge. And I read it in just a few days because it was so amazing.
That tends to happen. We get a lot of feedback that people, they're a little hesitant to start. 450 pages can be intimidating. But then once they start, it's, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, waking up during the night and thinking, actually getting the characters right in their head. So we're pretty happy to get that kind of feedback.
It's awesome, yeah. And you, well, when you told me it was going to be made into a movie, that's when I was like, okay, this must be a pretty good book. So that's when I had started sort of reading. I read a few pages and I was really into it, but then I put it aside and I didn't pick it up again. And so, yeah, I oh my God, it was so good. And it's really, I mean, it's a story about spirituality. It's a love story. It's about soulmates. So, and hi, Renee.
Hello.
I haven't heard from you yet.
Yes.
So tell us what inspired you to write this book, and maybe if you want to tell a little bit about your backstory, about how you came together.
Okay. Well, why don't you start with that, Renee?
Sure. I mean, you know, I think, you know, when people ask us what our book's about, basically it's been described as Indiana Jones meets Eckhart Tolle.
Ah.
And, you know, imagine if you have past life memory and your soulmate does not. And that was the question that basically set us on our path. And we started to explore those concepts.
Well, and our main character, Marcus, he has memory. And his soulmate Theron doesn't. And he chases her and pursues her lifetime after lifetime as they're reincarnated. And we place them at real places in real history. And what he discovers is the many, many ways that love takes place. And many ways he loves her, and the roles that they play, and the different shapes their bodies take, and the sexes. And he experiences everything that a human can experience because he has so many lifetimes.
Right, conventional love, parental love, platonic love, and we explore all types of love within this book.
Wonderful. And so now, I know you two have a special story about how you came together, right? So can you share? Tamara's smiling.
It's actually as interesting
awesome.
As the book.
Well, when we first came together, we actually met online, and we had both just gone through devastating breakups.
Mm.
Tamara was married, and I was engaged to be married. Our partners decided to play the infidelity card on us.
Mm.
So we were basically a puddle of goo in the fetal position on the floor, and and our friends had suggested that we try online dating. So I
very hesitantly tried online dating. I'm a little older than the youngsters that it's just part of life now. But for me, I had never done it. So I did go online and I hid my profile. And I kind of just decided, okay, well, I'll read through. And when I saw Rennie's profile, it actually made me laugh out loud because he was really clever and really different and just funny. So we started talking on the phone, and I actually laughed until I cried. And so we had to meet. So we eventually had a lunch together after a little bit of time. And
wow, that's a big commitment for online dating.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty awesome. And
that's when the trouble started.
Yeah, that is when the trouble started, because basically at that point, you know, everything's very interesting and casual, and you're just trying to get out there and get your life back up and started. And we just had so much going on between us that we wanted it to go somewhere. But did our lives make any sense together, Randy?
No, I mean, how do you amalgamate two distinctly different lives? Like, I was a single guy, actor in the arts. I traveled around the world with my backpack. She was a mother. And they just didn't quite fit together.
Yeah, I had roots. Randy didn't. Yeah. Okay, so the two of us, it didn't seem to make a lot of sense. But we had to make it make sense.
So tell me about that, because a lot of times in online dating, as everyone has heard, I'm dating. Mm-hmm. And if there isn't, I mean, what made you know that it was worth the risk? Because sometimes going in, if you see that your lives aren't going to mesh, you're better off to just like not even get things right. started. So what was it that made you?
It was love.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we actually did break up. And we said, look, this is crazy. This is not going to work. Why put ourselves through this? And we went our separate ways. We spent about, what was it?
5 hours.
Yeah, it was a little longer than that. But we did spend some time apart, and it just felt empty. And it was like, we talked about earlier, I would rather spend one day with this woman than not. Mm. It was kind of like, yeah. I just wanted
one more day
her in my life.
Rather than a lifetime. With
alone.
Someone else,
right?
You know, it was very powerful, the connection that we had, and it felt like a soulmate kind of thing. And what ended up happening is Rennie phoned me and said, you know, this feels like crap. Where I'm miserable, you're miserable.
How do we make this work? What does that look like?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, a voice inside my head said, write a book, you idiot. And that's how it all started. Yeah. And I actually had a number of screenplays that I had been writing. And so I pitched her my favorite story, and she loved it. And the very next day she began writing.
Yeah, I began writing right away. And then I would come back to Randy and I'd have all these questions. I'd be like, and how does this work? And where do we go from here? And what can they do next? And it was a couple that had already connected. And we saw ourselves in that couple, in Marcus and Theron. And when we look at this book, that is what's really resonating with people, is that they are seeing themselves in these five lifetimes, in these different characters, and the angst and the love and the mourning and the breakthroughs and all the questions that they have. Are really resonating with people. So that's why it got picked up for a movie, because people see themselves in it. And I don't know if you did, Marie. Did you find yourselves?
There were times, I don't know if I would say myself, but there were times that I was very moved and very inspired. And it feels like as I've been doing this show, I sort of go up and down in my like level of optimism and hope and belief and all of that. A lot of times I'm like, I think this is all bull. I think all the spiritual teachers are just lying and they're telling people what they want to hear. And then another day I'll feel hope again and I'll be like, no, maybe there is something to it. And so this book really, I really felt it in my core. I was just like, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I believe in like the concept of one soulmate, but I definitely believe in the concept that is throughout the whole book, is that we're all one and that we're all connected. And that's what really resonated with me the most. And of course I loved like the part, and I think everyone's favorite part is the Plato and Aristotle and all of that. And I won't give away too many details, but I'm just wondering how much of that was based on actual, like, how closely does the story relate to actual history? Because I'm not a history buff.
Well, it's funny because that's almost one of the first questions, other than how do two people write a book this big? The next question is this real? And the fantastic part about it is it is. It took 3 years to write this book, and that is because we edited and researched. Rennie was tireless in his research. Thousands and thousands of hours went into it. You know, right from what I learned in university, you know, 20 years ago in philosophy class was, you know, barely scratched the surface. There's an enormous amount of research that went into the book in every one of the lifetimes. There's lifetimes, Genghis Khan comes into this
yes,
book.
Yes, that was awesome.
And you know, the present day, we had to be really accurate in our history and in our geography and right down to what you eat, you know, 3,000 years ago. We kind of wanted to be right on point.
Yeah, and I think it all kind of started at, we started to ask ourselves, what would a 13,000-year-old man know that the rest of us do not?
Ah,
and
yes.
that was kind of the question. And then as I started to do my research, you know, a thread revealed itself. I found it in quantum mechanics and biology and cosmology, mathematics, theology. I mean, it was in everything. I said, why isn't everybody talking about this? And it was this concept of oneness, this, you know, the inner evolution towards one consciousness, you know, and the ultimate realization that there is only one, which led us to the flower of life symbol.
Mm-hmm.
And that flower of life symbol is in every culture. It's in ancient religions. It is in Stonehenge. And the oldest one is in the burnt into the columns of Osiris, the temple of Osiris in Egypt, just outside of Luxor.
Well, and the flower of life symbol is, we found that there's symbology all around us all the time that's been trying to kind of give us messages and sort of Da Vinci Code-esque, you know,
mm-hmm,
that
yeah.
that it really is there, all these underlying meanings. And you know, there's a biological basis for the flower of life. Why don't you explain that, since you're more the science guy?
Well, I think it really
moves the mic a little closer.
I think it really ties into what you're doing with synchronicity. I mean, it's like two random, unrelated events coming together to create a lesson or a message for the observer. And we're seeing that, especially in physics right now, where the observer is affecting the observation.
Mm. Yes.
Right. So it's kind of, you know, in this grid, this, you know, we have this grid where this connection where we can tap into the grid. And it's, you know, the universal grid, you know, it's a conscious web of energy that connects us all with everything. And we can affect and alter that grid by choosing what we put into it with our thoughts, our actions, and our choices. You know, the grid works much in the same manner that we're all connected to the Earth's magnetic field. Right? I know this sounds very, like, but...
I'm sure the listeners of this show can handle
the woo-woo. Yeah.
Well, there's enough energy in the Earth's magnetic field to store all the information from every human that ever lived, past, present, and future. And some people refer to this field as the Akashic Records. And it's believed that we can tap into that information through types of meditation or lucid dreaming, types of that nature.
I think it's really important to kind of come back to your point, Marie, that that people don't know what to believe anymore. They've got hope and then they don't have hope. And then it all seems like, is it all just to make us feel better? I have felt like that. I've gone through that. And I think that's part of the human experience of mm-hmm. that duality of sometimes we're singular, sometimes we're connected, sometimes we're really in the grid, and sometimes we're really separate and we feel isolated.
Yeah.
And I truly believe now that that is the illusion. And once you learn that that separateness is just an experience of being here, that you can kind of get through it. And one thing that happens in one great year is that we really show that even a being that has full memory,
yeah.
that knows the grid exists, that's lived it, can actually feel isolated, alone, and lost. And, you know, that's why we go, oh, it's not the end. It's
exactly. Like, this is what I have it right here. Marcus doubts himself till the end. The whole time, he never feels like he's doing enough. He doubts because he's looking for Theron the whole time. And so it's like, well, is my searching for her screwing up destiny, right? So there's always that question. Am I doing enough? Am I, you know, every mistake he makes because he has the memory, he questions. And it's like, even with the knowing that everything happens for a reason, because he meets people throughout the time that remind him everything happens for a reason, no matter what path that you take. If you take the wrong path, you're going to get recorrected, right?
Right.
But I mean, even with all of that, through all those lifetimes, he still, till the very end, is like, am I doing the right thing?
Which implies to us, and I think to all of us, that that is the point. That when we're here, we're not supposed to know everything. We're not supposed to have every. If it was easy, there'd be no lessons.
Yeah.
There'd be no growth. There'd be no, you know, we're working towards an enlightenment. We're working towards something different. And if we already knew it all, you know, there'd be nothing to be here for.
I think that's kind of the soul's journey, isn't it? We kind of come here to learn lessons. That's
yes.
the point.
But those lessons are so painful sometimes.
Yes, and we do ask why. And in this book, there is a lot of pain.
Yeah.
There is a lot of suffering, and there's a lot of loss and mourning. But there had to be. And we've had a few people actually comment to us, you know, there's some pretty violent, you know, there's war, there's death, there's a few really gruesome scenes. And, you know, I am a mom, and those scenes aren't easy.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a mom or whether you're a sister, whether you're a dad, it doesn't matter who you are. It's not easy to hear really dark news.
Mm-hmm.
But we knew that we could not show balance if we didn't show that.
Yes.
And it wouldn't ring true, and it wouldn't be real, and people wouldn't identify with it. And, you know, what we have going for us here is that the first thing people say when they finish the book is, I want to reread it because now I want to go to the beginning knowing what I know now. And the second thing is, when's the next book coming out?
Mm-hmm.
So we're really happy to say that the second book is being written as we speak. We are working really hard on it. And strangely enough, the third book is simultaneously seems to be like pushing its way out as it's, you know, as we're getting the information and research for book two. Right on the heels. We got book three going.
Nice.
Me too. So we're putting, you know, a big file together of that stuff. So it's an amazing journey. I mean, Randy, why don't you tell her what it's like when we write?
Well, it's fun. It's time for a break.
Okay.
I do want to hear that. But this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with, okay, I'm so bad with last names. Veach. Okay, Tamara Veach and Renee DeFazio.
Yeah.
And so they are the authors of One Great Year. We're going to talk about the writing process as well as what One Great Year is all about, because I was expecting it was 1 year, but it's actually not. One Great Year is a totally different thing. So we'll be back with more Synchronicity momentarily.
The Honorable Emery Barnes was first elected NDP MLA in 1972 and subsequently re-elected 4 consecutive times. In 1991, he was appointed Deputy Speaker, and in 1994 became the first Speaker in British Columbia to be elected by a secret ballot of his peers. He was also the first Black person to hold this position in any Canadian province. A member of the opposition party remarked, "Your personal dignity, honor, and integrity are beyond question and reproach, and you are a most fit individual to sit in this very important position as Speaker." The main focus of his life and career was helping the disadvantaged in society, with strong emphasis on social justice, poverty, worldwide human rights, and world peace. He was active in developing awareness of Black history in BC and furthering the principles of multiculturalism, particularly in the public sector. Barnes was appointed to the Order of British Columbia in 1995.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
There are a lot of things you're not allowed to grow in your basement in Vancouver. Vegetables are not one of those things.
SPEC and the YWCA are excited to introduce the Urban Farmer Field School. The UFFS provides hands-on training in sustainable agriculture, small farm business planning, and community food action.
class instructors are experts in urban agriculture, food systems, and plant mind control. The integrated curriculum is divided between classroom theory and practical learning.
For more information, please visit the interweb and search for Farmer Field School at spec.bc.ca.
Hello and welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Tamara and Rennie, and they are the authors of One Great Year. We're going to talk about what that means in just a moment, but I wanted to let you know I have two pairs of tickets to the Wellness Fair that is next weekend, February 15th, 16th, and 17th here in Vancouver. Always lots of fun, lots of samples and fun stuff to see and little massages and whatever. So we'll have two pairs of tickets to that. I will give them away at the end of the show, the very end, so that I actually have time to talk to you and get your name on the list. And also we have a gift of the book One Great Year. We have one copy. So you'll have to come to the station, to UBC, to pick that up. Oh, are you going to mail it?
We'll mail it.
Oh, okay. Even better.
You give us a name and we'll mail it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even easier than anyone can get it. What I would imagine in Canada, right? You don't want to be shipping to like internationally.
Canada, U.S.
Canada or U.S. So if you're listening online, and then they'll give you the book as well. So yeah, I will put out the cue to call for that. Maybe for the book before our next break, just so it doesn't get too confusing with the tickets to the Wellness Fair. Okay, so you were going to talk about the writing process, and I also want to know your definition of what a great year is, because it's not just one year.
No, it's not. I'm going to let Rennie deal with this. He's Mr. Research.
Well, the great year, essentially, it's the procession of the 12 signs of the zodiac, right? It takes approximately 26,000 years for the zodiac to complete one revolution. Or the wobble of the earth to create one spin. So that's essentially 26,000 years. And it's believed that within this 26,000 years, there's a rise and fall of consciousness. So we explore that those ideas within our book, and that becomes the backdrop to our adventure story.
So the rise and fall in consciousness, what that actually looks like is we have a golden age, a time where people are really connected, where people are almost ethereal, and they're connected with telepathically. They've got a knowledge of the universe that, you know, that we can only glean now. But that as that descends from that time, it goes into a silver age and a bronze age and into a dark age. And as we go through those times, people are less connected and they do have that sense of isolation and separateness. And in our story, and we didn't invent the great year. The great year actually is a phenomenon that Plato talked about. And we actually had Plato as a character before we even knew that he coined the term. One great year or the great year. So it was pretty exciting to actually have that synchronicity come together for us. But the great year is talked about in how many? 31
different ancient civilizations, according to Hamlet's Mill.
So just to stop you right there. Now, are we at the end of a great year right now with the whole Mayan calendar thing, right?
Well, actually, we're actually coming out of the dark age. If we actually just got back from the Yucatan, Mexico, where we sat down with some Mayan elders, and how it's been distorted here in the West, it isn't what they set out to meant it to be. And the calendar is essentially one calendar in a bunch of calendars. It's like a cogs in a wheel. They kind of spin and connect. Mm. And so they talk about us coming out of this dark age and moving towards a higher level of consciousness, right? So it's this process of undergoing an expansion towards higher levels of consciousness. And Albert Einstein, you know, he said that it was difficult to elucidate this feeling in anyone who doesn't feel it, but it's very important in art and science to awaken it in those and keep it alive in those receptive to it. So,
and that's interesting. I don't know if I have the quote here, but I actually remember that there's a quote in the book about how art and beauty is often, because it's so connected to spirit, in the darker times, it is
the light.
It's like banned, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, it
exactly.
Is the light. So when people are inspired They talk about muses. They talk about their inner voice or being in a trance as you're writing, as you're dancing, as you're making your music. Those are inspirations and intuitions that they're higher level. It comes from a very different part of you than your lower level survival.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anytime you get out of survival mode. And in Canada, many, many of us are very, very fortunate that we don't live full-time in survival, trying to eat, trying to find shelter. And we can take advantage of that, honestly, and work up our chakras out of the gut, not that the sexual is bad, because there's some of that in the book, too.
But there are some good love scenes.
There's some good love scenes. Well, love is multifaceted, and the love is really important in the book, and bringing it from every level up into the higher level is really important to us, because that's real life. You got to show all of it.
Rennie, you wanted to say something?
I think that behind every great adventure story, there has to be a love story. It's the reason that we're all here, right? We're either running from it or searching for it, afraid of it, or madly in the middle of it. It's a part of every human interaction and lifetime. And that's why it's so important to have it in our story.
I have to share with you, one of the things that I got out of the book as I was reading it, I think it was closer to the end when Theron has a child, and I'm not going to give away too much. But I'm on the fence with regards to children, because like they're a lot of work, right?
They are. But, I love you, kids.
But as I'm reading the book and their connection, even though at one point one of her children is not very nice, and yet the connection is still there, and it brings her so much. And even the naughty child, like this bond that they have is so real and so pure. And it was like, wow, maybe it is worth all that work.
You know, I read a quote a long time ago. In our book, you're right. It is a profound love, the love between a parent and child. We treated it that way. And before I was a mother, I remember reading a quote, and the quote was something, I'm not saying it perfectly, I'm saying my version, but it was along the lines of, once you become a parent, you forever have your heart walking outside your body. And I have lived that. So that for me is true, and I know it's not for everybody.
That must be terrifying, though.
It was terrifying until I truly understood that we all have our own path, and that our souls are all connected. Yes, but my little units are on their path, mm-hmm. and I can do my best, and I can be the soft place to land, and I can be, the loving, supportive person that I try to be. But I cannot shield them. They will have their own lessons. And once I didn't own that anymore, it's incredibly freeing to actually watch them. They're going to get bullied. They're going to have their moments. And people go through far more difficult things than I've had to deal with. But the love is truly, truly profound, because they rely on you.
Mm-hmm.
Every other love I've known in my life, you can walk away.
Yeah.
And from your children. And some people are able to do that from their children, and some people aren't. But there is definitely a piece of you that goes beyond, a connection that's just different. Because they're needy. They're helpless to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, their path doesn't come without their own challenges.
Yeah.
And I think in learning what we've learned through this book, it's made both of us better parents, enabling to understand the process and understand that it is a process to be a child, and just to be there in the moment, at the moment, for the moment.
Right. Well, I think when you realize that you're just, this is all a big game. That honestly, we replayed, it's every game is a new game. It's like playing Clue. You never know what's in that, little envelope for you. You never know who you're going to be, or you're going to get killed in the studio or in the library, or, you're going to slip down the stairs. You don't know. what's going to happen. And as life unfolds, you just have to know that the difficulties are actually have a purpose. Hmm. And maybe it's all hogwash. You know, maybe the spirituality, maybe it really isn't that way. And maybe people clutch to it to make them feel better.
Well, there's value in that, too.
There is. But when people say that, I always ask, okay, do you know anybody that says, I didn't learn anything from that dart, from that negativity?
Exactly.
You don't. People always say, you know, I often say, I wouldn't even change it because where I am now is so much better. What I learned from it really helped me. So that's one thing about, you know, wondering, well, is there any purpose? Are we really here? And who do we have a job to do?
And that's, yeah, I mean, and it was interesting to see in some lifetimes, the job is very obvious. Like if you're the son of a king, mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious what your life purpose probably is, right? But when you're just some other person, you're having to find your own way. And sometimes your purpose doesn't become evident until it just sort of falls in your lap. And you're like, oh, this is what I'm here to do. And yeah. It can also shift throughout your lifetime, right?
Well, and I think it does. I think that, I mean, I feel like I've lived 5 or 6 lifetimes within this one. And, you know, and I've got lots of years ahead of me and I'm looking forward to them. And I'm not afraid of, you know, what might come around the corner. And I don't expect it to be all rosy. Mm-hmm. But I know that it has, you know, there's things attached to it that, you know, Marcus and Theron go through some pretty heavy stuff. But it's always tempered and balanced with the great moments. But I do, it goes right back to love. I really do believe that, you know, that's what it's all about here. And that comes right down to compassion to people on the street, that we're not just talking about the ultimate romantic love. We're talking about day to day, you pass by somebody that needs something, even just a smile, and you give that, that builds up everything in our mm-hmm. world around us. Every single kind action, everything we do matters.
Rennie?
I absolutely agree with that. I think I've seen that in my own life. The kindness that we show to others, it manifests in your own life, and you'll find that kindness gets returned to you in all different manners, in synchronicity type manner. And it's just a beautiful process to see it happen, and I absolutely believe in it.
Well, you know, how Marie and I met is actually a perfect example of that. I was following Marie's posts on for Namaste Publishing, and I was quite a fan because she always had really positive, you know, nice things to say. So I'm following her, and she asked one day, "What did you do today?" And it was a great day to ask that because I had a beautiful experience. And that experience was, I've been driving my kids to school, horrible drive every morning. And we were waving. We saw an elderly woman in her house. And we were waving at her. We started waving. And she jumped out of her chair and would wave at us as if the Queen of England was driving by. She was so happy to have us waving at her. And so within about a month of doing that, I pulled over my car and my young son and I went to the door, knocked on the door, and we introduced ourselves because it felt very connected to have that joyful moment twice a day and not know who she was. So we introduced ourselves. She cried. She thanked us. She hugged us. She thanked us more. I got home. Marie said, "What did you do today?" And I typed in, "This is what we did." But the beauty of that is now I'm sitting here. And that is 9 months later. So by having a moment that I was able to share, just, you know, I didn't share it for any reason other than that. When I did meet Marie, when I met you at the Namaste event and you happened to be there, I could identify myself. I said, "Hey, I'm the lady that just went and talked to the elderly lady and we connected because we knew we had something in common. And that was our, you know, the soul that we care about what happens to other people." And so that, you know, doing those things, it helps your life grow in a better way. Even, and it doesn't have to be altruistic. Feeling good and feeling happy because you've helped somebody, that I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to give away your book, so let's go to a break. Okay, so the first person who calls in at 604-822-2487, I'm going to take down your name and address, and they're going to mail you a copy of One Great Year, One Great Love, One Great Adventure, One Great Year. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. So if you want a copy of that book, you've got to be the first person to call 604-822-2487. There we go. I'll grab you in just a second, And we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment.
The question, what kind of cities do we want to live in? How do we want our cities to be? Cannot be divorced from the question of what kind of people we want to be.
Join me, your host, Andrew Longhurst, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for The City, an hour dedicated to critical discussions of urban issues. Live on CITR 101.9 FM and CITR.ca. For more info, visit thecityfm.org.
With the vast amount of changes happening in the world, it's almost impossible to get a clear picture of what's really going on.
We are trapped within the logic of capitalism, leaving us unable to imagine what comes next.
The Extra Environmentalist brings the perspectives of people who can see the whole picture and are ready for whatever comes our way.
Tune in to The Extra Environmentalist every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
This is the viewpoint that makes all places the same to you.
The question, what kind of cities do we want to live in? How do we want our cities to be? Cannot be divorced from the question of what kind of people we want to be.
Join me, your host, Andrew Longhurst, every Tuesday at 5 p.m. for The City, an hour dedicated to critical discussions of urban issues. Live on CITR 101.9 FM and CITR.ca. For more info, visit thecityfm.org.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. And congratulations to Tim, who just won a copy of One Great Year. Thanks so much for listening to the show. And again, at the end of the hour, I'll be giving away two pairs of tickets to the Wellness Fair that is happening next weekend, probably under the sails or somewhere thereabouts at Canada Place down by the water. That's usually where it is, but I'm actually not 100% sure. So you can Google the Wellness Fair if you want more information about that. So right now we are speaking with Tamara and Renee. They are the authors of One Great Year. Welcome back to the show. Now, where were we?
Wow.
We were talking about synchronicities. We were talking about the namaste, how we met.
That's
and,
right.
And connecting. And it's interesting, on page 180, I had to write this down. His venture had been plagued by misfortune and failure, as misguided ambitions always were. Now, this is a lesson for all of us, because he saw a seer. He was told something that was going to happen. So he saw some things that looked like it might be that. So he started to try and squish them in and force them to work.
Yes.
And they didn't feel right, but he was like, well, I know the future, so I'm going to make this work. Of course, it didn't work out because that wasn't his path. And he ended up in the right place anyway. But let's talk about that, because so many times, like, we feel like we have this greater purpose, and yet we do try to force things to fit. So how do you, even in your relationship, it sounded like there was a bit of like, well, we're not going to be compatible. So how do you balance the, like, not everything is going to be easy and perfect. There is going to be work, but how do you tell the difference between working towards something and forcing something that's not going to work?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, there's one giant word that comes to mind immediately, which is surrender. Okay, you stop deciding how the universe is going to make things happen for you and how it's supposed to look. For me, I had to get out of the box that I was in, that I was supposed to be, a corporate wife in a big house and just, you know, my kids were supposed to have this kind of life, and where my true inner self really was a traveler and a writer, always has been, but I didn't know how to do both. it was really easy to get in the box and say, you know, this is safe. There's no fear here. I know what this looks like. I grew up with this. But it was really, I love that you focused on that, because it's such a little line. But so often we do want something out of our lives, or we think we know what's good for us, and we do. We cram it. We try to keep going with it, and it doesn't work out. And when something doesn't work out over and over, it's not right.
There's a preacher I saw. He's like really evangelistic or whatever. He was on YouTube or something, but he had said something about don't cry over the people that reject you, because like you're lucky they're gone. If they don't want to be with you, then that's their loss and not yours. And so many times, like you saw, like I'm going through yet another breakup. Yeah, what else is new, right? And I'm like, I've got tears like in the back of my eyes all the time, because mm-hmm. it just feels like so sad. But at the same time, if this person isn't a match for me, and I broke up with him, by the way, for the record, but anyway, it's still sad, because, you know, you want, it's like there's so many things about this person that's nice, or there's so many things about this job or this situation that feel like they could be great. If only this one other thing was working. But because it's not, you try and force it right. instead of just letting it go.
Right. And society tries to force it. They'll tell you you're being too picky. You're being too this. You're being too that. And what you have to do is you have to trust your inner voice. And we know what's good for us. We know what intrinsically makes us happy. And if we go against that, trying to force it, it's not going to work. And you're not going to be happy. And you can't make someone else happy.
No.
And I think what happens is we have these themes in our world. There's really not that much going on. I mean, beyond the basic survival things, people have fear, and they have abandonment, and they have rejection, and these are the themes that over and over come up for people. And once you start to recognize them, you go, oh, okay, that's just my fear of being alone or my fear of abandonment, and it's not really about this relationship. So you can kind of move through it a little quicker, I think, when you realize, you know, it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not the right one. But what did you learn?
Exactly. Yeah.
What did you learn? So you look at, I mean, all the way through this story, even our 13,000-year-old, you know, Marcus, who knows everything, he doesn't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's learning all the way through, and so is Helgul. And we haven't talked about Helgul yet.
No, we haven't.
Okay,
he's the dark one, because I don't want to give away too much of the book, right? And once we start getting into it, well, this is something. Okay, I wanted to talk about this because I wrote it down and I highlighted it. Through the Dark Ages, a linear approach to sociology was embraced, denying the idea that our ancient ancestors had more knowledge than we do. Further, with the advent of Darwinism, the popular belief became absolute. Mankind must progress in one direction, primitive to modern. There is another, more accurate truth. Civilization is circular. One great year of approximately 26,000 years marks the rise and fall of civilizations as they move through one entire procession of the equinox. So that could be a segue into talking about the darkness, because we do kind of think that we came out of like the Homo habilis and Neanderthal and all of that. But I mean, we don't know about the pyramids and all of that. So let's talk about the darkness and the circular nature of humanity.
Yeah, I think mankind is starting to discover that we're far older than once believed. There's so much evidence, and it became much like a Da Vinci Code kind of quest for us. We started asking questions and looking for information, and there were civilizations and ruins being found all over the world that predate 6,000 years. There's Göbekli Tepe in Turkey. There's Yonaguni that's on the bottom of the ocean off of Japan that's been covered in water for over 10,000 years. They found an ancient civilization off of the Bay Kambay off of India that's also been under the ocean for 10,000 years. They're finding pyramids off of Cuba under the ocean. So there's all of this information that's starting to come out that's suggesting that mankind was equally as intelligent as it is today, and that we somehow, through this dark age, and you can actually look at when the dark age was, and it definitely coincides with what was happening in Europe, that there all this information was lost. All this information from the ancient Greeks was lost. And we look at it, does it happen? Does it's happening in our own time?
We can't even find all of the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So.
Right, and we're seeing for Greece, for instance, all this enlightened information that was discovered in a golden age or a silver age is being lost. And look what's happened to them today. Their economy is crumbled. And all this information is still there, but nobody's aware of it. And much like India, where we learned about the Yugas, which is their version of the Great Year, which is a 24,000-year cycle. And it's written in the oldest book in history, which is the Vedas.
Yeah, so there's a lot of evidence that things are far older. And, we kind of were piggybacking this a little bit. You mentioned, you know, the darkness. And we talked about not being able to have dark without light. And in our book, we have quite a powerful nemesis. But he, too, is human. Mm-hmm. He, too, lives during these different lifetimes. And there was a point while we were writing and we were choosing where in history and who in history. And it didn't even feel like a choice, honestly. It seemed completely rational and obvious who our characters had to be. Almost as if they were real and this is a true story and it had to be told.
I have to question. Did you consider putting him as Hitler? Hitler is not in the book, but...
Just so you know, there is an entire story that was written and not put in, and okay. It is World War II, and he actually, in the book, we refer to it, and there was a gentleman called Hans Kammler.
Oh, yes. Who,
and he's a very key figure in the war, and very subversive, and had a lot to do with ancient knowledge. And the search for ancient knowledge. And he was responsible for a lot of really awful stuff. And yeah, so we had a lot more information there. But we didn't want to do anything that had been done or mm-hmm. overdone. Because the minute you take it anywhere cliche, you lose your readers. Because it doesn't feel true anymore. Yeah, so it did go there.
I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So I wanted to ask now, I've lost my train of thought here, but we're talking about the darkness mm-hmm. and Helgol, and he's a good bad guy. Yeah.
Yeah. We liked him too. I think the most important thing about a bad guy is that they have to have dimension. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, six edits and 3 years of giving our characters dimension and reality. And no one's all bad and no one's all good. And we all have all of it in us. So the more you can bring that out in your characters and have them interweave, it's more like a tapestry that if there wasn't a Helgol, you wouldn't need a Marcus.
Right. And your good guy's only as good as your bad guy is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if your bad guy is an intelligent bad guy, it makes your good guy look that much better. And that was really important to us. We wanted, one thing when we started writing the story, we were so tired of stories that were so
predictable
and lame. And it felt like there was no mental challenge to it. And we wanted to change that. So we have some
surprises for you in there.
Yeah, there's, yeah. You know, this book will have you changing differently in 450 pages.
Yeah.
And that was the goal. And we didn't want it to fall into any kind of paradigm. It had to be a shift in entertainment. And we like to refer to it as enlightenment through entertainment.
Right. It was ultimately, we just wanted to, 100% it had to be entertaining. It had to be an adventure. It had to have the aspects of real life. And we wanted people to identify with the characters. And, you know, most of the time people do. I mean, a friend of mine said, my husband and I are Marcus and Theron. And it keeps happening. People keep saying that. And I just say, wow, you're lucky.
Yeah.
You know, we feel like that. We feel, you know, like we have found that for, you know, in our life. But it took 40 some odd years. You know, it didn't come early. It there was a process and a growth and a and getting to a point of surrender, of knowing, you know what, I cannot make this fit.
Yeah.
And what are you willing to do? Because life is choice. And what we have realized more than anything is that life is not happening to us. We are building it with our thoughts, with our words, with our deeds. You are building your life. So it's not happening to you. Even your emotions, we choose them. Mm-hmm. We can choose to, you know, when I had my heart broken, when my ex left and I was a single mom suddenly and turning 40 in 6 months, I actually said the words, I will not make a year of my life about a divorce. I will pick myself up and I will do something. Mm-hmm. And I asked for help. And, you know, I've been a writer all my life. And until my brilliant partner came into my life, Rennie, and had these fantastic ideas and ceaseless. I mean, honestly, the imagination that he has is unbelievable. And he would come and I would write something and then he would completely go, no, you know, we'd have our glass of wine and the candles would be lit and we'd have the fireplace on and I'd go, look what I did. And he'd say, that's not it at all.
Oh.
And I would just think, oh, you got to be kidding me. But then he'd come up with something better and more brilliant and more intricate. And yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Well, we kept thinking about it in terms of the movie. We knew we wanted to make a movie from this book. So everything had to have a visual element to it. And I love to read, but what bothers me in a lot of books is this, that they come from the same idea from six different, you know, perspectives. And it's like, okay, I get it already, you know? It's like, move on. Let's get the story out there. So that's what we did. We put this adventure story, and when people finish reading it, they say, oh my God, I can see the movie.
Yeah, that's what I was, when I was reading it, like, it's very descriptive, and you can picture what it's like there, which I think it's going to be hard to actually visually create what you would see in your mind.
Yeah.
In a movie, but that'll be a new adventure, right?
Well, and what's important is that CGI has finally come to a place now where it's able to create the elements that are in this book. Like, its time has come, you know, and that's what's exciting about it. We've got many people, many A-list directors and studios looking at this project right now, and they're trying to figure out whether or not they can do it or not. Within a budget, of course, but
right. Yeah,
yeah. No, it's been exciting. They're going to probably split it into two or three movies because it is a, you know, it's a comprehensive book with all the different lifetimes, and it'd be quite big budget. But we're looking at that, and we're looking at building a screenplay with a writer, and they're now getting the publicity out, and we're getting the books into more stores in Vancouver, and we're building regionally, and we just got picked up by a U.S. publisher.
Yay!
Congratulations! Thank you. So that's for U.S. distribution and Canada-wide and international. So you know, we started as an indie. Because when we wrote this book, we knew we wanted it to get out there. We didn't do it to get rich. We did it to have a life together and to get a really entertaining story out there that people could, you know, maybe learn something from, maybe question. You know, Plato and Socrates, there's a great scene early on when you really learn that the reason they're so brilliant and the legacy that he's given us is question everything.
Yeah.
Don't take anything for granted. Ask why and ask how. And that's constantly happening. People are coming to us going, I read your book. And then I went to Google and I looked this stuff up and it's actually real. And, you know, that was the point. The point was, you know, we're going to give you a unified world. We're going to take all the different theories, all the conspiracy theories, all the realities, all the religions, all the history. We're going to put it all in one place and, you know, like a little bird feeder. And you can come and you can take the pieces that you're ready for, that you want. It's multi-layered. I mean, we've had yogis reading this book and giving it, you know, high acclaim. We've had school teachers reading it. We've had, you know, 20-year-olds who are just starting school who, is this stuff real? It's really got a breadth. It can reach a lot of different people at a lot of different levels.
Right, and we're opening up a conversation. That's the important thing about this book. It's getting people to ask questions. And we've created this fictional story in a non-fiction world, but it's all based on actual history. It's based on actual philosophy that's from all over the world. That's the beauty of this story.
And people want to talk about it. So what's ended up happening is now we have something called pod parties. And pod parties are, you know, pod stands for proof of design. And we're going free to bookstores. We're going to be at Banyan Books on May 9th. We're going to be at Utopia Books in North Vancouver. We're going to be at Whitby Books in White Rock. And we're doing them privately also. It's all available on our website, www.onegreatyear.com. And if you go to our website, we have an events page. You can see where we're going to be. And the pod parties are doing this, but, you know, more interactive. We'll let you have a word in edgewise, Rory. But honestly, we're just going to talk about, yeah, this is what we found. This is the real history. This is what's going on. What do you think?
Cool.
Yeah, people get a chance to talk back and to ask questions. And we love meeting people that are into this, that want to know more and just want to have fun.
Cool. And I think that intelligent design concept is a little scary for a lot of people. We're not talking about intelligent design as in other than the universe speaks a mathematical language. What can we conclude from this except that life is good and not to mention something we can count on?
Wonderful. Well, we just have a few minutes before Chris comes in for Parts Unknown. There's actually one part that I wanted to read. I don't know if you want to read it. It's close to the end of the book where, you know, the doubt is creeping in and they need a ray of light.
Okay. It says, how can we make a difference stuck here? Quinn had the answer that they sought. We have to try. One thing that I do know is that fear and doubt keep the soul from moving forward and growing and advancing. But be conscious of that, and by choosing to face our fears, we can overpower them. We are connected and we are spirit. Never stop being spirit. If you believe you have a soul, then you must know that your divinity never leaves you. When we join together with others like us, who understand the power of oneness and connection, then we can illuminate the darkness around us. We can affect the vibration of the collective world consciousness.
Hear, hear.
I just got choked up reading our own book. That's awesome.
I know. I think I probably cried a bit during this part too. And that's why I had to highlight it, because it's just so beautiful. And it's so true. I mean, whether all of this is true or not, I mean, you feel it when you have connection with people and when you reach out and you focus on your oneness rather than your separateness. And we all have abandonment issues. We all have a fear of loneliness and rejection and all of that. And that's one of the things that, through my dating, that it's been such a challenge, because there comes a point where you have a choice. Do I go for what I want, or do I settle for what I have because I'm too afraid to be alone? And
Never
a lot of
settle.
People do that.
Never but, settle.
Yeah. But a lot of people do that, and I don't, and it hurts. Because there's a comfort in settling for not being alone. Mm-hmm. But it's a slow, painful journey rather than, like, it's not that stab in the chest where you're ripping each other apart. But, I mean, sooner or later, it's going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this prolonged agony of not being on your right path and trying to force something that doesn't fit. So do you have anything to add to that?
You know, I think a lot of people are happy with a warm 6 out of 10. Okay, but what happens is the warm 6, if it starts as a warm 6, you're going to be a real cold 2 or 3 later on in life. If it starts as a 10, it's going to be a 7 and a 10 and a 7 and a 9 and a 10 and a 12 and you got to go all the way, go hard for what you want, because what you believe you deserve is what you will get.
But I want to clarify, though, because it's not sometimes what we think we want. Like, we have this list in black and white. We write down a list, or he's got to be 6'4" and he has to make $150,000 a year and he's got to, you know, look like this and have blue eyes and all. Those are not, that's not the 10 you're talking about. Can you talk about the 10?
I think Lao Tzu said it perfectly thousands of years ago. And he said, when it's simple, it's probably right. I think that's it. Yeah. I mean, when it's nice and easy and relaxed and you can be who you are 100% of the time, then you're probably on the right path. Right.
And my instinct is to always go with your, not with the material. Take all the material stuff off your list, how someone looks and how much money they have and what they do for a living. Take all that stuff off and say, is he kind? Is he compassionate? Is he passionate? Is he excited about life? Is he, you know, if, you know, it, does he have the, do we match sexually? Are we both on the same, you know, wavelength? All those things matter more than any of the material list. So,
sorry, and I just want to say, he has to inspire you, right?
He has to be your equal. Okay. If you are an inspirational person, if you want to live in that inspiration and spirit and be somebody that flies by the seat of their pants and takes the world by storm, then your partner better bloody be there with you, because that is joy. Sharing that is joy. If you have to have your equal, and they're out there and they're looking for their equal, but nothing comes easy. Mm-hmm. That book is 472 pages of free work for 4 years now. Nothing comes easy, but it is an incredible joy to us. So the hardest things are the things most worth working for.
And yeah. all the cliches come into effect, don't they? It's like, you know, it's not the journey, it's the destination, it's the journey. And it's, I mean, it's ridiculous once you get to where you want to be, you realize that all those cliches are absolutely accurate.
And your stories right now, I know you're writing a book.
Yes.
And your stories right now may be more about your experience and your writing than they are about you finding your match. Because...
Oh, no.
I know. I'm sorry, Marie.
What have I done to myself?
I know too much about what you're doing in your life. But yeah, it may really be about that. It may be you need to be... Because you're setting an example by being a teacher and being a writer, you may have to learn some lessons just so you can help others and share them.
Damn it. This is what I've set. I've set myself up for this. It's my own fault. Okay.
Surrender.
All right. Well, this has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we've been talking about One Great Year, www.onegreatyear.com. Tamara Veach and Rini DeFazio. And again, www.onegreatyear.com. I think once the movies start coming out, this is going to be like Harry Potter success.
It's available at Banyan Books right now. Banyan Books right now, in Lonsdale at Utopia Books, Reflections in Coquitlam, Whitby Books in White Rock, and online anytime. We will mail you a book. It's only $19.99 for this beautiful, huge book.
$9.99 awesome. For your ebook.
And for the ebook during the funding drive, you'll be giving away a couple of copies of that as
correct.
Well.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we are running late already for Parts Unknown. So that will be coming up next. And the first two people who get through on 604-822-2487 will be on the list for the wellness fair. You and a guest. 604-822-2487. Be well. I love you so much. Namaste.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today. I've been accused of loving you for so long now.
The now of folk, the now of rock, the now of alternative. Join Evan on Definitions Soundwave Thursdays from 1 to 2 right